The Senate Finance and Revenue Committee meeting to order. Welcome, everyone. We have just one item on our agenda today, House Bill 2472, and we just got the amendment. Senator Morris and I have been working on this amendment for a couple weeks, and we just got the actual amendment. So today we're going to have staff go over the amendment, make sure it does what the summary that's on your desk says it should do, and we will not act on it today. So, Chris, we are in work session on House Bill 2472.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I guess just to start off, referring to the summary sheet, just in terms of the policies that are amendments in 2472A, I'll just read through those to touch on those and then walk through the amendment.
That'd be great.
Okay. The first one is to reduce the cap for all renewable energy projects down to $10 million. The second item, bulleted item, is reducing the total percentage to 30% evenly over 5 years, and then reducing the allowable cap for projects by the amount of grants received from the Energy Trust, increasing the conservation standard from 10% to 20% energy savings, and then removing the electric car manufacturing facilities from the bill. That has been placed in House Bill 2180 over on the House side. And then there's a study. The bill would require a study to be conducted by the Department of Energy in consultation with PUC and Economic Development to evaluate the effectiveness of the credit in attracting investment. So in terms of where those policies are contained in the actual amendments, I guess walking through them side by side between the 2472A and then the dash A30 on one side, in lines 3 or 4 of the dash A30, where it deletes some language on pages 2, 3, and 4, that is the language that pulls out the renewable manufacturing facilities credit for electric vehicles.
Okay, and just so people in the audience know, the electric vehicle credit will not be changed from the House passed version of the Betsy. It will just be in a different vehicle. So if anybody's concerned about that. Okay, continue, Chris.
And then, again, referring to the dash A30, lines 6 through 9 there, the deletion there is where the cap gets reduced to $10 million. And that is on page 5 of the A in gross, where on lines 1 through 6, you can see that the structure, there's some bold language and deleted language. Those were the modifications on the House side. That created a kind of a four-tiered cap, where you had the standard $10 million as a default category for most projects, a $40 million for the equipment manufacturing facilities, and then a $20 million cap for facilities with installed capacity of 20 megawatts or less, or a $15 million cap for larger projects. Essentially, the change there was reducing the cap for the larger projects down to 15, from 20 to 15. The dash A30 essentially deletes all of that language and creates a two-tiered structure where what remains standing, if you will, are lines 7 and 9, so that it would read that the credit is $40 million in the case of a resource equipment manufacturing facility, or $10 million in the case of every other facility. And then moving to the dash A30, we get into a series of pages that are just new language added to the bill. So section 6 of the dash A30s is the piece that reduces the percentage down to 30%. And you can see the bold language on page 2, lines 7 through 10, saying the credit allowed in each of the 5 succeeding years shall be 6% of the certified costs of the facility, but may not exceed the liability of the taxpayer. So that's the piece that gets it down to the 30%. And then on page 3, lines 8 and 9, you can see the delineation here. The bold language there, lines 8 and 9, is a spelling out of the 30% for the certified costs of the renewable projects. The other pieces that remain untouched are, again, I'm referring to page 5. On line 5, there's a 50% credit for the equipment manufacturing facilities. That remains unchanged. And then down on line 15 of the page 3, that's the 35% credit for all other projects. Those are the conservation projects and the recycling projects. So the only piece that changes is the renewables go from a 50% credit down to a 30% credit. And then flipping through to page 5 of the A30s, section 7 is the bold language there, and the deletion lines 5 through 16 that's the policy that reduces the eligible project costs for any grant received from the Energy Trust. In current law, grants received from the federal government are already reduced the project costs. And so this treats the grants received from the Energy Trust similar to those received by the federal government.
Yep. Chris, does the federal government grant get deducted from the cap or from the whole project cost?
Madam Chair, it's the whole project cost. Mm-hmm. So whatever is eligible for the credit, so you have the project cost is X, and then that gets reduced by the grants, and then that will be what is eligible for the credit. So there may or may not be an effect depending on if it's above or below the cap.
Okay. Now, do we determine how the federal grant is treated, or do the feds determine that?
It's Oregon determines that for the purposes of this credit.
Of the federal credit? In the case of the federal energy credit, the way it offsets the eligibility, do we determine how that is done, or does the federal government determine how it's done? The issue is whether it's taken off of the whole project cost or whether it's taken off the cap.
It's taken off the project cost. So if a project costs, or if the certified costs are $5 million, and there were $100,000 received for a grant, then the amount that would be eligible for the credit, for the Betsy credit, would be $5 million less $100,000.
Okay, so it's not the total project cost, it's the amount allowable under the Betsy.
Right.
You could have a $200 million project and a $10 million Betsy, and this would be taken off the $10 million, correct?
I don't believe so. I believe it would be taken off the $200.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to talk about that because.
Okay.
So who determines that? Is it the federal government that determines that policy choice, or is it us?
It's the Assembly.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. And then flipping through the pages on Section 8 starts with the conservation increase, and you can see some of that language on page 7 where the increase to an energy savings of at least 20%, and that's the bold language you could see on lines 5, 21, and 23. So that essentially raises the bar for a project to be eligible for a conservation credit portion of Betsy. There's a higher standard. And then the last section, section 9 on page 8 is the language that would require the study to be conducted by the Department of Energy with the Economic Development and the PUC to determine the impact of the state incentives on investment in the state.
Okay. Let's put aside that last amendment for a second on the study, because I'd like Senator Morris to address that after we talk about some of these other things. Are there any questions on the other parts of the amendment for Chris? Senator Rosenbaum.
Back on page 2, the provision on lines 7 through 10 about, or just that phrase at the end about may not exceed the tax liability of the taxpayer. So these credits are generally sold to other taxpayers. So does that apply to the original entity that's supplying, or does that apply to whoever the credit is sold to, or both?
Senator Rosenbaum, it would apply to both. In terms of it not exceeding the liability of the taxpayer, that That's simply...
So if you're applying for this credit and you don't owe enough taxes to take advantage of it yourself, you wouldn't be able to then turn around and sell it to somebody else.
No, you can sell it to somebody
else.
You can
sell it.
Yes, you can transfer.
But it can only be sold once under our policy. And if you can't take the, if you can't use the credit, it can be carried forward and used
right.
in a later year.
Well, maybe a better way for me to ask this then is how does that provision differ from what is currently the case?
The transferability is not affected.
Right. So the limit is new, though. The being limited to cannot exceed the liability of...
No, that's not new.
That's not new
that's
either?
That's always been.
Well, all that means is that it's not a refundable tax credit.
Oh, I
it's
see.
It's not like you're earning income
okay.
tax credit where if you don't have enough liability, you still get the...
Okay.
Is that correct, Chris?
That's correct.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Telfer.
I know you wanted to... I don't think you meant to delete or oversee the last bullet point, but... question I have regards to the last bullet point.
Oh, okay. I just thought we could take the other parts of it, and then I wanted Senator
right.
Morris to address the what he's getting at with the last part.
I just wanted to make sure that the change of this effective date in no way will bring harm to somebody who's already in the pipeline, who's already expended large amounts of dollars with the certainty or thinking they have certainty as far as credit. So this doesn't pull the rug out from anybody that's already in the process and has spent a substantial amount of money.
Senator Telfer, that's probably a good question for the Department of Energy to describe the process that the certification process where a taxpayer comes in and applies for a pre-cert and then would determine if they receive that pre-cert, then that's kind of the green light for the project to go ahead. So the timing of the, I believe you're referring to Section 10, pre-certs issued on or after June 1st, 2009. I think that would be a good question for Energy in terms of what they have in the pipeline and what they've been seeing over the past few months.
Okay, who from Energy would like to come and address this?
Oh, there you are, Betty. I missed you over there. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Betty Merrill from the Oregon Department of Energy. On the issue of preliminary certifications, when we issue a preliminary certification for a project, going forward, that preliminary cert is what the project will be finaled at. So if a preliminary certification has been issued and it says that it's, for example, on a renewable project, that it's $20 million and 50%, when that project comes in for final certification, it will receive a final certification of $20 million and 50% if those costs are justified. So in terms of this preliminary certification being June 1st, I don't know what I've certified since June 1st, but there may be some projects that have been certified since June 1st that would be impacted. This would be like an emergency rule for us to have to implement.
Senator Telfer.
Thank you. Do you have any idea how many are in the process, haven't gotten to the preliminary certification yet? And with that, then, how long does it take for somebody, once they've applied, to actually get that?
We are supposed to turn applications in about 30 days.
30 days.
However, with our backlog, we're in the 60 to 90 day.
Follow up?
And so how many are in that?
Madam Chair,
Andre.
Senator Tepler, I don't have a count today for you for how many would be in that quandary right now. You're talking about applications that have been submitted and not yet certified. I do not have a number for you today.
But isn't it true that they really shouldn't be making any investment until they're pre-certified? Is that correct?
Madam Chair, the BETSI program requires that you submit an application, and when you receive that preliminary certification, you have the okay that you will be moving ahead and the guarantee of what those costs would be. If folks were to move ahead before their preliminary cert, they would do so at their own risk.
Does that answer your question,
mm-hmm.
Senator Telfer?
It would just be nice to know how many are in that application process.
Can you find out and get back to the committee on how, you know, where, I think we're mainly concerned with people who have been pre-certified or are on the verge of being pre-certified around that June 1st deadline. I think our concern is not wanting to have people make an investment and then change the goalposts. Okay. Any other questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any statements in rule that would lead someone who makes an application to believe that they could expend funds on the project in anticipation of getting a preliminary certification?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, basically what we have done over the past is folks have always, you have to have your application in before you can make a commitment of funds. And so once
your application in?
Their application must be submitted to the Oregon Department of Energy so that when we go back to certify the final costs, that there was no expenditure prior to the application being in the office. The reason being that Betsy is an incentive, not a reward. So if you're going to do the project anyway and you put the funding out prior to submission of your application, then you probably didn't need it. Folks have, over the past, gone ahead, made sure their applications were in, and then moved forward with projects.
So what happens if they move forward before a pre-certification?
Madam Chair, a number of folks have moved forward with projects in the past, and sometimes the preliminary certification process takes a while. It can take a while because the information wasn't submitted correctly, insufficient information, whatever. But when the final certification is issued, the customer knows how much the Department of Energy has said is eligible. In some cases, that can be a different number. Many times it is a different number than what they apply for.
You're saying that so tell us the difference between a pre-certification and a certification.
There's a preliminary certification, which we call a pre-cert, and there's a final certificate, which is issued when the project is complete and the project costs are confirmed.
Senator Morris?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm still a little unclear. So you're saying that a number of projects have moved before final certification, I think was your word, have projects moved before preliminary certification?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, projects have moved forward. Folks have decided they're going to do a project. They submit their Betsy application and write a contract to purchase equipment before the preliminary certification has been issued. They have not received a preliminary certification from the Department of Energy saying these are your eligible costs. People have done that, yes.
And to follow up Senator Tilber's question, we don't know, or you would have to do some checking to see how many people would fall in that category.
Madam Chair,
that'd
committee,
be important information to understand.
Yeah, we need to understand who's basically made investments, although, as you said, I mean, they do it at their own risk. If somebody moves forward with an investment, assuming a tax credit, before they know what they're eligible for, it would seem to be a kind of a tenuous situation. And I think what Senator Morris was asking was, is there anything in your rules that gives people the impression that they can count on a certain level eligibility before their certification is issued?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think what has happened over time has been that there are certain folks who have used this credit, particularly vendors and people in the construction business who know about our credits. They use our credits to encourage investment with their clients. Those folks many times will, in their financial model for their customers, they show them what the estimated BETC would be, maybe what the estimated utility incentive would be. That's part of their process in selling their products.
Okay. Now, while you're here, it's been we've done some research, and there's really a lot of apples to oranges when you research other similar credits around the country, but it's been pretty clear to me, and I think it was clear when we had a recent meeting, but just for the record, is this the best energy tax incentive program in the country?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe that the BETC credit as it exists today is the best credit in the country.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Senator Telfer.
Could I ask what defines it as the best?
Madam Chair, Senator Telfer, I think a couple of things. We've been doing this for a long time. We have a very progressive program in terms of energy savings. For example, on the conservation side, a 10% minimum savings on a cost-effective project, which moves conservation projects forward. On the renewable side, a 50% credit with a $10 and $20 million cap are definitely the best in the country.
So success is the amount of renewable that we've actually put on the ground.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, I was talking about the actual amount of the incentive. Is there anybody else in the country who would contribute more toward subsidizing, say, a windmill project?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I can't talk to that. I believe it to be true, but I have no data, substantial data.
Where would we get that data? Because I've looked at it online, and I think I know what I'm seeing, but how do we get that for sure? Would the PUC be the source of that data?
Madam Chair, I can work with the PUC, and we can try and pull you that data.
Okay, because I think what we'd like to know is how we stand up, not just under current law, but with these proposed changes. In other words, would this, if we're number one now, would we still be number one, or would we slip to number three? We're trying to get an order of magnitude, because part of the reasons for these credits is competitive factors, being able to compete with other states. So that would be useful information to have.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, one of the things that has been truly demonstrated since the change in the legislation in 2007, moving the tax credit caps and the percentage for renewable energy projects, we have seen a boom in these kinds of projects that we would not have seen without them.
And I don't think that's one bit surprising. it's true of any endeavor. If you put enough incentive in there, the question is, from the taxpayer's standpoint, how much incentive is necessary to do the job. Senator Telfer.
And that's a good point, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, since we have a 25 and 2025 goal, would changing this incentive, since it is so successful and that we've put a lot of renewable energy on the ground, will this cause, if we reduce the incentive, will this cause us to perhaps struggle to meet that 2025 deadline?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that would be a question to direct at the Oregon PUC, I think, as opposed to the Department of Energy. I know that the 2025 goal, we're making progress on that. Part of the reason for increasing the incentive for the renewable projects in 2007 was to enable RPS.
And can you help us understand? I understand that some of these windmill projects are selling their power to California. And could you tell, do you have an estimate of how much power is being sold to California? That this would have a bearing, Senator Telfer, on meeting our RPS standards. Because if they're in long-term contracts with California, then obviously they're not available for us.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there was a great deal of discussion during the House committee meetings regarding the sale of power to California or out of state. Power producers produce power. They arrange a power purchase agreement. Those power purchase agreements can be short-term or long-term. They can have requirements to have to sell back into the Oregon market, even if their primary sales is outside of Oregon, primarily in case of an emergency. We don't track the amount of power generated from those facilities that is sold out of state. So we can ask the PUC again.
Could the PUC do that? We might just invite Mr. Savage, I think is the one over at the PUC who's following this. I think we'll invite him to attend our next meeting. He's not here, is he? John, are you out there? Okay. All right. Other questions? Yeah, Senator Morris, thank you very much, Betty. Helpful. Senator Morris is, I wanted to draw special attention to Senator Morris's proposal here, which you'll find in on page 8, line 28, this section 9 is something I'd like Senator Morris to address in more depth.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and colleagues. The request for this amendment arises out of the frustration that I experience in looking at a very technical matter and trying to make an informed decision. We, the state of Oregon, we represent the state of Oregon, we are investors, but yet we are making decisions without having the data to make that decision. I know that individually, if we were making the investment, we would want a higher level of information than anecdotal information, and by and large, that's the information that we've been given to date. So the purpose of this amendment is to ask the Department of Energy, in consultation with the Public Utility Commission and the Economic Community Development Department, to prepare an analysis of the financial aspects of these projects for the wind energy facilities and conservation projects that are certified for receipt of tax credits, including capital investment, federal and state tax incentives received, revenues and costs, and return on investment. And the purpose of the analysis will be to determine the extent to which each facility depends on tax incentives to continue operation. And I recognize that maybe our language isn't quite sufficiently artful. It wouldn't be strictly to continue operation, but it would also include the decision to invest and continue, invest in the operation and the continued operations. So that, colleagues, is what's behind the suggestion that we have a higher level of information upon which to make the decision of how much we, the state of Oregon, will invest in this kind of project. And I recognize that tax credits do not always move around a return on investment. We measure return on investment in different ways, from a policy standpoint, from an employment standpoint. We're wanting to incent certain things like the 2025. So there are a myriad of things upon which we make that decision. But the fundamental issue that we face in this determination, we're looking at changing the investment levels, but the information that we have to date is largely anecdotal. So in the future, to evaluate this, to do it on a more informed basis, would be the intent of this proposed amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Morris, for that explanation, and I think we will play with that particular language you called out, because really the tax credit is more at the front end of a facility rather than a continuing. We don't give tax credits that I know of. I mean, am I wrong? That we don't give tax credits to allow the wind farms to continue operating. It's an initial investment. Is that correct? So maybe we can retool that to do that. Okay, are there other questions from the committee? Okay, committee, I'm going to hold this over, and we're going to make a change in at least that part of the amendment. And what I'd like you to do is look this over for the next couple days and see if there's any other tweaks that we need to make in this. Chris, can you give us a general feeling of the revenue picture behind these changes, what we would expect for a revenue impact in the next biennium if nothing has changed, and what these changes would result in?
Madam Chair, a number of the policies interact with each other in terms of, for example, there's a 10% cost overrun would interact with the cap, whether a project can go up to 10 million or 20 million, as well as the rate, whether it's 50% or 35% or 30%. And right now, looking at the collectively, the revenue impact I'm getting for adopting all of these policies is right in the neighborhood of $40 million for the 2009-11 biennium.
So what would that would be $40 million less than what we would otherwise expect to spend with no changes, is that correct? And so how much would we be spending in the next biennium on this credit if this were put in this form?
If I follow up the question. If memory serves, the tax expenditure report has the overall Betsy impact in the neighborhood of $150 million.
So we'd still be spending $110 million.
In that neighborhood, yes.
Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In that calculation estimate of revenue changes, did you take into consideration if the 10% overage disappears? The contractors will be just adding 10% to begin with in order to compensate, because, you know, having built a number of buildings, I can tell you 10% is not a whole lot of leeway, because chances are you're going to have overages. And so my sense is I'd build it into the project cost to begin with. And therefore, you're not going to get any revenue generated from the lost part of that credit.
That assumption is built in, so that for the revenue there is from projects that hit the cap, not for all the projects. Exactly what you described is kind of assumed the response would be for projects that are below the cap. So for right now, under current law, there's a $20 million cap, or that $20 million credit really turns out to be $22 million because of the 10% overrun. So by eliminating the 10%, it's only for those, the only impact it would have in terms of revenue would be for those that are hitting the cap. So right now, the cap of $20 million kind of ignores the 10%. So with that 10%, those projects are $22 million. So if you remove the 10% cost overrun, you're saving $2 million on each of those projects.
Follow-up question. But on the other hand, then, we may be reducing the amount of renewable energy projects that get out there because there's no cap. I mean, they've hit the cap. There's nobody else can get in the pipeline.
No, there's no cap, Senator Telfer. This is an open-ended program. It's not first come, first serve.
No, I understand. I'll think about an example to get you through the explanation on that.
Madam Chair, it's project basis.
Right.
It's not a global.
I understand that.
So people come in with a $20 million cap, or they'll come in with a $200 million project and qualify for a $20 million Betsy. And then at the end of the pipe, they say, oops, we had a 10% cost overrun. And so it'll be $22 million. So what this would do, if they built it in, they would still be coming in with a $20 million Betsy, but they would not be able to take that extra $2 million.
No, thank you, I understand that. I'm thinking of, let's say the project comes in at $18 million credit. Okay, taking the reverse. So now we're going to spend another two because they're going to add the other 10% or 1.8 instead of 2. So what I'm saying is you're going to be spending more credit on below those caps. If somebody's below the cap, they're going to add the 10%, therefore increasing the amount of credit even though it's below the cap.
Betty, can you come back for a second? Because I think I know the answer to this, but I want to make sure. How many, let's just stick with the renewable, the windmills for now. How many projects do you have that actually fall below the cap?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, projects fall sort of in categories. Right around $10 million and right around $20 million. We really don't have that many in the middle. Most of the renewable energy projects are coming in at a $20 million cap.
So not many of them that you've seen would fall into this category where if they built in an extra 10%, it would make a difference.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in the Betsy program, regardless if it's a renewable or a conservation program project, if you came in with a preliminary, with a project with a $100,000 project, for example, and you came back after you completed the project and you had receipts that said you spent $115,000, the final certification would be issued at $110,000. 10% over the preliminary cert value.
That's my point. I guess the example I'm using is City of Bend is having a solar facility put into the parking structure, and it's way below the $20 million, way below the $10 million. So, I mean, there are a lot of projects that I deal with that are below the caps, but I'm hearing not many. So, must be unique.
Senator Morris.
Thank you. I guess maybe it's not surprising, Betty, that the projects are kind of aggregating around that cap, the existing cap of $20 million. I would think we set the laws, you set the rules, and it creates certain behavior. And in order to capture the greatest return on investment, your project, you wouldn't want it to go over $20 million. So it's probably kind of a self-fulfilling outcome of the laws that we pass. I don't know what your observation would be, because as I understand it, there are rules with respect to ownership and distance and what becomes aggregated and disaggregated as a separate project.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's true. Some of the other amendments that were placed in this bill by the House committee directed energy to go through a bit more of a process on certifying any project over $5 million. Part of this addresses the questions you have regarding the study that you've requested to be completed, but those are covered under Section 2 in the bill, which if a project's over $5 million, it allows the department to have a few more statutory requirements that we can put a facility through. For a renewable energy manufacturing facility, we actually do a third-party due diligence to look at their business model, their finance model, their capability to produce a renewable energy manufacturing product. We've, in the 2472A engrossed under Section 2, we'd be asking applicants to jump through a few more hoops. So we'd be making sure that any applicant's not arrears in state or local taxes, that they've applied for all permits and licenses, that the facility is going to be in operation for at least 5 years. We're also going to be asking those project owners the number of jobs that they're going to create, the economic benefits to the state of actually building the facility, the revenue impact of granting the certificate compared to other benefits, and is their application dependent on receiving the Betsy credit. So there's a number of things we're building in to the application process for any project greater than $5 million that's going to help us to collect the data that we need for the program and to ensure that these projects are staying in operation.
To get back to Senator Telfer's point, I'm not sure we really fully scratched that itch. Do you have any kind of process internally, and there may not be a solution to it, but do you have any process internally if someone does come in with a very inflated estimate on what they're going to be spending? Say they're worried about cost overrun, so they inflate it. Do you have any kind of quality
or fiscal assurance on the process that you go through?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do. Betsy is not only a currently a, on a conservation project, a 10% savings requirement that would be cost effective, but you actually cap the projects at a 15-year payback. So if your project, if you're spending way more money than a 15-year payback on your energy savings would justify, then your project costs are going to be limited to what is covered by 15 years of payback. So working with what an energy savings, what your energy savings is projected to be, and the payback, and then looking at some standards. For example, an easy one is when we look at, we see a number of lighting projects, so we have an idea of what the range of costs are. In a number of projects, lighting would be a good example. We have projects that come in high and actually when they're finaled are lower. We go back and we periodically choose folks to ask their CPA to actually provide the data other than a CPA letter for projects over the $50,000 so we can actually see the true costs of the project.
Senator Topper?
Well, having done some of those letters as a CPA, I guess what started this conversation was the fact that I'm looking at the small projects. I don't want to kill small projects that are under the cap, and yet I'm told that most projects are at the cap. So how many small projects are we talking about that we that go through the process, get pre-cert, and are less than the cap? I'm getting the sense that there's very few. Maybe I'm doing them all. I don't know. So,
Madam Chair, the Betsy sort of splits in two places, and that's the conservation portion of the program and the renewables portion of the program. So that most of your conservation program projects are under $5 million.
I think those are the ones you're working on, Senator Topper, is that right?
No, there's some renewables in there, too. Okay. But they must be a very nominal number compared to the big picture. So.
Can you give us a for instance so she can respond?
Well, I think one is probably the parking structure. Well, mine's a total blank on the other projects. I know we just put one out that had $60,000 tax credits.
But that would be, I mean, it sounds...
That wasn't conservation either, so...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I can pull some numbers for you on some ranges of conservation projects and renewables projects so you can kind of see the range that we get.
Yeah, that would be helpful because this is a more complex program than one would think to start looking at it. Okay, other questions from the committee? Okay, I think Senator Rosenbaum.
Just and not for this witness, but as we're looking at how our existing program compares with other states, it seems like it would be helpful to look at with these changes how we would compare.
Correct.
Too.
Yeah, and that's what I'm really trying to get at is having an understanding of what goes on in other states. And I think maybe if we bring back both you and Mr. Savage together, that might be a useful exercise to kind of combine your knowledges. So we know what we're doing here. And, of course, once Senator Morse's study is done, we'll have a much clearer mm-hmm. idea of what we're doing in the future. But... that's in the future. Okay. Thank you very much, Betty. Sorry to keep dragging you back up here. Are there any other questions from the committee? Okay. I'm going to roll this over till tomorrow, if we can get Mr. Savage tomorrow. And we'll just keep, if we have to put it into Wednesday, we will. We have another couple bills that we'll be looking at tomorrow. But for now, we are adjourned.